I've really enjoyed the Kiwis this week, and we thought we'd round up the week with a sort of Kiwi-cum discussion. And we're lucky enough to have Frank and Jane George with us. Frank's an authority on the Scottish music Appalachian style and how it developed into Appalachian music. I think that's right. Appalachian. Sorry. I was giving lessons on Scottish pronunciation in my pipe class this morning, all the different names and trying to get people to say them. So that's one back on me. We also have Ian who plays Highland fiddle, Scottish Highland fiddle. Who's going to join in the playing and the discussion, and also Buddy McMaster from Cape Breton, which is a completely different style again. So it's really just trying to tie all these things and see how they developed and how the music has changed over the centuries. And feel free to butt in and ask any questions during the course of the thing, and there'll be some dancing and playing and discussion. So I'll hand over to Frank anyway.
Thanks, Frank.
Well, I'll have to say a few words, and it'll be very few. Nobody in West Virginia, or very few early settlers, kept any records, family history, family trees, anything like that. But we know that a majority of the first settlers, the early settlers, in what's now West Virginia, in these mountains, were what I call Protestant Irish. You can get awful involved and confused in terms here. But there's an awful lot of Scottish names. If you're in any of the 55 counties of West Virginia, look in a phone book and you'll be amazed at how many Scottish names you find. Not only the Mac names, but the names like Cameron, Campbell, Prentice, etc. And I found that many of the first settlers, we're talking about 1750 to 1800, I think, late 1700s. And we find the Campbells and Camerons, two that I know, came from Ireland. So, you know, they'd already moved once. Now, whether their parents went from Scotland to Ireland or their grandparents or what, I don't know. But there's a lot of moving around. But we had this, about 80% of these first settlers were what I call Protestant Irish. And, of course, a great many were Scottish. Even the Highland names are represented sometime, the people further north and west. But when I became interested in this and realized what obviously had happened is the tunes. So what I'm going to do is play some tunes that I learned a long time ago, and I learned from people who were not influenced by television, certainly, not even influenced by radio, and not even influenced by records, even cylinder phonographs. Now, what they heard on a traveling show in the early days, something might come through and it would have to be, I don't know what year that would be, they might have picked up something from the outside. See, this is something I don't know, but certainly not much outside influence before radio and cellular phonographs. So let's, Ian, would you care to come over here, or I'll come over there and play a tune?
Yeah.
Now I'm going to play, I'd like to play what I call Old Molly Hare, and I hope Ian will play Fairy Reel.
You had me worried.
We can play it separate or together.
Do you think we can try it together?
Well, let's give it a whirl.
D sounds like the...
D? Thank you. You probably noticed it was a little bit different, but you can easily recognize the tune. So I say somebody brought that tune over at an early date, because the fiddle was the favorite instrument in the mountains.
Would you play your version?
Okay, sure. I hate to mention this with Hamish around, but the pipes didn't survive if they were brought over. I've always been puzzled with that subject. I've never found a satisfactory answer. If the pipes got here, which I don't know, they didn't survive. The tunes survive, a lot of them, on the fiddle. Mainly the high part was different, the second part, you see. Could we do a little bit of that McDonald video?
I don't know that tune at all.
Well, just run over some of it.
Maybe Buddy say the two, you know. Hmm? Maybe the three of us could. Buddy.
Okay. Yeah. You're being paged. What was it?
Yeah, that's okay though, but if we weren't to do McDonald's reel, you know, we could try.
Well, the reason I mentioned this one is you call it McDonald's reel. Do you call it, you'd floor clean that?
McDonald's?
Lord McDonald.
Yeah. Lord McDonald. I call it leather breeches. Yes. And that doesn't mean leather breeches, it means dried beans put on a string and hung up to dry. Leather breeches.
Lord McDonald. I have played a traditional Cape Breton traditional way, but
yeah. Well, we'll do it separate if you want. Or
why not do it just the crazy way, the whole lot, same as the last one, all together, and see what comes out.
Start on the high part.
Connection anyway. Mm-hmm.
See, that's what I was trying to
do.
You just did the octave, which is fine.
What was the first tune you played?
What do we call that?
First tune's the
fairy dance. And I call it Old Molly Hair.
How does it go?
Old Molly Hair. Oh, you want to hear them separately? Okay.
Play it. Keep writing.
You see, 250 years ago when the postman came to my house and he delivered me the sheet music for that Paddy's Leather Breeches, this is what came out for me. We've got a dancer here. Maybe she'll just pop up and do Paddy's Leather Breeches, the famous dance from Scotland. And this is what I thought Paddy's Leather Breeches was. Going to do it in her bare feet. So, good. That's the stuff. Sorry, it's not the right...
Pretend like I have jig shoes on.
Yes. And actually, that's green and white, that. Don't be fooled.
Lost something in the translation.
Yeah, this isn't quite enough.
When I grew up, of course, no fiddlers read music. Most of them had never seen music. And I might add there that I just thought that a jig was almost unknown. People played reels. They even played hornpipes real time because it was for the square dancing. But somewhere back there, a few fiddlers figured out that a jig, a 6/8 double jig, was better for Virginia reel than a reel. It was much easier on the fiddler and the dancers. So they had about a half a dozen jigs that they played, and they weren't familiar with the word. They were called quick steps, the tune. They didn't know what a strathspey was, period. They'd heard tell of a schottische, but they wasn't sure about that, you see. And they played some marches. They'd heard tell of a hornpipe. They played a few. They almost always played them real time, so there was a problem there in the types of tunes. The reel was what was in demand, so everything practically turned out to be reel.
It's amazing the number of people who don't know the difference between a jig and a reel. And I heard a really good description when I was in County Clare once. And the chap said, "Well, I'm sure now, a jig's a jig, but the reel's the real thing."
Now I want to have Paddy Rogers here. That is your name, isn't it?
Yes.
Play a couple of tunes. This kid, it's learning, I hope, real good, looks to be. And I thought I'd mention here, when her dad was just a little feller, how old was he when he used to hang around the fair?
He was either junior high or something.
Well, he was a little bigger, maybe. Anyway, this Scott Rogers, her dad, when I'd play music at the Beckley Fair, every time I turned around, I'd fall over him. And he was very interested in this, and I kind of take a little credit for getting him interested in getting his kids interested. And so, of course, these two girls, where's the mama? She's here somewhere. Becky, and she's a strong influence, plays the guitar and helps them with their music. So this is a good example of a West Virginia kid who might amount to something musically. There's a curse of some kind on it. You played that, well, that was your buddy last year, okay.
How does this start?
Go ahead. Okay, play that one thing. All right, see, the teacher knows how to start.
Go to the source.
The second part was different. I play it, and I think she's going, I think she started on this note, whereas I start on A. But anyway, it's about the same thing, and I learned that tune as The Devil's Dream, and in Scotland, it's The Devil Among the Tailors. Is that right?
Deal Among the Tailors.
Deal Among the Tailors.
Well, more or less.
How about K-Brad?
Devil Among the Tailors.
Devil what?
Among the Tailors.
So there you are. Oh, what more proof do you need?
Is his version different, do you think?
Oh, you want to? How about playing your
version?
Well, Buddy has two versions there.
Well, play the one closest to mine.
Yeah.
don't play that tune, but I'd play
something like
that.
You
want to
try
the
G?
Maybe a little score.
I don't play the tune either, but it goes
something
like this.
The point is, the point I'm making here is, years ago there was an old tune played, and I learned it from, I don't remember, called George Booker. And he was a revolutionary officer, or hero of some kind, in Washington's army back in the Revolution. And here's this reel played called George Booker. And years later, I got with Alan Jabour, who some of you may know, works in the Library of Congress or something in Washington, a great tune researcher. And he says, this is the same tune as the Marquis of Huntley's Farewell, which is played Strath Bay, and of course George Booker's a reel. Well, I could have told him that. It would be a reel if we played it, no matter what. But anyway, the tunes are so similar that I'm convinced that they're the same. The one's descended from the other, however you want to say it. But I don't know whether anybody can play it, and I'm certainly not going to play it without help.
No, it's not a tune I know myself, but you know, playing it more or less straight the way we would hear it in my place, as far as I can.
Go ahead and cover up my mistake.
Oh, well, I'll need to go down half a note. And then it goes on to the variation of the second part, which I'll just make a mess of if I try to play it just now. Is that similar to your one, buddy?
Well, a little. It's similar, but
We'd really need the music planked in front of us to play the tune.
Well, I'm sorry I brought that one up, but anyway, I'm convinced that George Booker is from Marquis Huntley's Farewell, and I'm also convinced that the famous tune of French Carpenters, Camp Chase, is a variation of George Booker. So we have three tunes that I'm convinced
are the same tune, basically.
Yeah. That's my idea. Now somebody else can come along and tear that old piece.
Play George Booker so we can hear.
I'd rather not. I'll have to work on it a while. Somebody corner me later and after I learned it in A, and it's in the standard tuning. And when I learned to play in A as a kid, it was cross tuning, E A E A. And when I play A tunes in standard tuning, it really is a problem for me. My notes changes. So I'd rather give you a rain check on that one. Now, Jane, would you want to show them the dance variation now?
Yeah, let's do that.
We're going to run out of time probably, but right. Who cares?
Well,
we'll just stay over another hour.
I've only been here since noon yesterday, and I don't have any dancers that I've been with, you know, working with all week or anything like that. And in fact, I don't teach dancing anymore. But we are going to show you, or try to make a connection between Scottish dancing and Appalachian dancing. And the first thing that I would say would be that it's nearly always based on reels, because that's what they dance to, more than anything else. Occasionally jigs or a Strath Bay in real time. And Joyce said it very well yesterday when she said something like that the people who came here did what they remembered, and of course it was changed some. And this Scottish country dancing that she's been teaching and that we see a lot of is more stylized than what the early people did in the mountains, because they were trying to do this, and it was far more informal and like at home or at a community gathering or something, you know. It wouldn't be precise, and everybody doing the same thing and all that at the same time. So if the group of people are going to help demonstrate these little bit of dances, do something a little different each one, that's more correct as far as Appalachian people are concerned than if they were all just exactly together. Because
just like my classes.
Is that it? Okay. She recruited some people for me. Will you come up, please? Those who were going to dance.
All right.
Thank you. What's the mic? There's similarities and differences. We're going to do something from a square pattern, and I'm convinced that the squares, of course, they say they came from France, and their quadrilles and the lancers are various names, but in Appalachia, it's an eight-hand reel, what it is, the square dances. And then some of the similarities are that figure of eight you do in many of the dances, you know, in countries and things. The three-hand reel, well, that's from Scotland for certain. And it's in, people still do these things, whether in the circle, square, or whatever. A lot of the calls are the same. Now, what things that aren't similar are the way you swing, about the only way that we could figure out in Scottish country dancing, at least, the way Joyce has been teaching it. The only swing that's similar is this, you call it tullock.
Yeah, we do the tullock, correct.
And that's called a right elbow swing. Now, let's see. Why don't you trade places with him, because I don't want him to be number one. All right? Tammy's come over here, would you please? We're going to do the Cumberland Square 8, and even though this tune and dance is named Cumberland, I don't know what the Scottish name of the dance was, but it was danced in Scotland, and that's fact, because we have researched. And she and I talked about the same book, the definitive work on the old traditional dancing in Scotland was done by Fleet, and it's fairly recent, except that they did a pretty good job of researching how it was taught and which dances were taught and which were most common and which one, for instance, the Circassian Circle, I think was mentioned by almost everybody, every dance master that taught anyone. Okay, will you play My Love, She's Been a Lassie Yet?
No, I'll play Sweet 16.
All right, or Love Somebody, or Too Young to Marry, and they have all these
play
dances. And you're number one.
I have to have an introduction.
You just simply do
what? Play along if you want to.
And then two start
would you review?
You're one, two, three, four.
Would you review the figures?
Remember, it's the slide down, the eight count down, eight count back.
You want?
Men pass, no, women pass back to down, please. Fellas coming back.
No, men just going that way.
All right, and women coming back. Okay. And then you do the wristlock star.
Well, we haven't learned it yet.
That's another thing that's common. There's always this, what is they call it in Scottish country dancing?
The wheel?
The wheel
right
is
hand
the star.
Left hand's back.
Right.
Do you want 16 counts?
Yeah, just a minute. Okay. And then,
I'm just dying to get started.
You got 16 counts to do each part and do that, because these others are going to be coming in. See? Then you circle left once and probably back home once and do it twice through. So we 16, you play 16 measures and then start.
Thank you.
This is not exactly. These people are too good at dancers. It's not exactly the way that you would see it in a down Gasaway or Framingtown or Flatwoods in Braxton County, where they still have danced all through the years in an old-fashioned way. And you see all kinds of different footwork as the men are not leading, you know, as the leading couple's not dancing. Or when everybody's dancing, like in the promenade, they just might do all kinds of things. But they'd all be hitting the beat at the right time. And that's the sameness of it. And I think the difference in Appalachian and Scottish is it's more bigger. It might be more like Cape Breton dancing, which is a little more bigger, I think. And it's less orderly than Scottish country dancing, I'm sure.
It's been disorderly.
Although a lot of elements come from it. Now, I think in lieu of time, we'll leave out that other one, and we will ask everybody in the circle to come up. Why don't each of you get a different partner, because we're going to do circles.
Do the circle.
Nobody called a figure. The time is perfect, and you don't know what you're doing.
Let me help you.
Okay.
The musicians are playing the same.
I'm out here.
The historical account was given, which is the accepted one. But what I would like to mention about that is that my family has been in the Fort William area, and you'll know from the name Kennedy that we were originally Irish. They came across from Ireland in the 13th century, and they came north and settled in my part of Lochaber. And I can appreciate that it came from Scotland right over to Cape Breton, because Glenalladale is about 30 or 40 miles from my home, and Glenalladale was the first place where an entire clan drew up all the roots, and they came over to Prince Edward Island, and they settled there. They were all MacDonalds, and I can appreciate that the dance came from our place, but I would say that originally it came with the Irish part of the Cameron clan. It actually came from Ireland, the very origin of it. It must have come. Yes.
Well, it came the same way to here then, but in little pieces. I would say, not all one clan at once.
Ian, could I ask, was it it was, you were saying it was done in Lough Aber.
Yes.
Was it also done in the islands?
It was done in Barra.
In Barra.
And the Barra step dance, the Spain reel, is identical to the Cape Breton step dancing.
This is getting too heavy for me.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
There's another similarity that it struck me that when the Highland clearances occurred, that large groups of Highland Scots went to Cape Breton, but they also went to North Carolina.
That's right.
And there was a TV show once where they interviewed a group of people and they asked these, I think it was about 8 elderly women, what their name was. And they all said, "My name is Flora MacDonald." So they were all right there. And of course, a lot of the clogging comes from that part of that.
Incidentally, they kept the pipes down there too.
That's right.
Yeah, they kept the shoulder pipes.
Hamish,
we lost them. We lost them, but they kept
them. The fact
of
the matter is that
we didn't have them.
People here didn't call it clogging. Clogging is a kind of an indefinite term.
Oh, yeah, forbidden.
And young people are wanting to do this, and well, they aren't quite sure what's wrong.
Probably
these cracks and pound kind of people will correct you. They call it stepping or flat footing is the terms they call it.
I've heard it called many names, but never clogging. That's so advanced. Never clogging.
Okay.
Is it so that the North America was under British administration at that time, and the pipes work is simply illegal?
Well, that's one theory.
Yeah, they probably didn't even bring them in here. We never had them start with, but the Carolinians kept them some way.
Yes.
About 1746 or 7.
Pipe down there at McRae Meadows on Grandfather Mountain.
Yeah, they brought them over. I think McNeil's boatloads from to Cape Fear, you know, Fayetteville, and they brought them over here.
There's two planes that come up.
McNeil's ships. I don't know, several plans.
Development.
But McNeil financed
it. It's going in complete circle. Because step dancing, the Hebrides step is now being revived, would you believe, in the Hebrides. It has not been done there. A Canadian person came to Barra 2 years ago to show some of the steps and the developments from what had been the original. And there's the Sparker
McCrae.
He is doing a revival of this at the fish. He was doing it this year in Barra. And the young people are now relearning and reviving the steps which usage had died out completely. I mean, it wasn't totally unknown. It was incorporated in some of the clogging which went down into England. The Scotland has no clogging tradition whatsoever. At least in my experience, in my lifetime, in my parents. And another instance as well is that bagpipes are very sensitive objects, and the atmosphere, the conditions, the weather, and everything that goes with it would be very different to what it had been in Scotland, so you may get this reduction in the use of bagpipes because of the maintenance.
The colonists was also very embittered against redcoats and the instrument. They associated with the British Army, hence everything became an enemy, became detested.
Well, the rest of it is,
very hated things.
Another theory is, you realize the people on the frontier here were very busy just living, and they didn't have time to bagpipes.
Well, they could more make a reed than they could climb a tree backwards.
In Cumberland, England, you have somebody's pipes just almost died out because of the maintenance that was required to keep a set of pipes playing. There had to be craftsmen who would make the reeds, and they had to be the craftsmen who would make sure that the bores were right, that the leather was the right texture and all the rest of it, and the sheer workmanship and skills involved in maintaining it.
It was one of these nearly every cabin, so.
And you know what was the downfall of the thumbing pipes?
How to handle that.
The automatic concertinas that came
That's
in.
That's right.
Because that didn't need any, it reduced the amount of thumbing pipe playing